Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty, along with Rita Dunaway, as we commemorate and celebrate the anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Yes, it's a wonderful time for picnics, parades, and fireworks, but also for much, much more. In fact, as John Adams said in a letter to his wife Abigail on the eve of the actual signing of the Declaration in Philadelphia, quote, "I am apt to believe that it will be celebrated by succeeding generations as the great anniversary festival. It ought to be commemorated as the day of deliverance by solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty." It ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this continent to the other, from this time forward forevermore. And isn't that something? That is exactly what has happened. But as we celebrate this great declaration, it takes on new meaning for us as we explore some of the deep biblical roots that are embedded in it and that can guide us in the great battle for freedom that we continue to face in America today, both at home and abroad. So, Rita, let's begin with the reason why this day is so important for us to remember.
Dean, I think that as Americans, you know, living in a well-established country where our government has been operating peacefully for a long time now, it's so easy to take it for granted and to forget that when our Constitution was written, it was such a unique and novel thing. I've heard it said that America is the first country that was actually founded on a set of principles, that we started from the principles and built our nation from there. And you know, about a month ago, I read through Thomas Paine's pamphlet, Common Sense. Yes. And as you know, Dean, this was written as Thomas Paine was agitating for the colonists to declare their independence from Great Britain. And Thomas Paine said, "The cause of America is in a great measure the cause of all mankind. It is the struggle for liberty over tyranny." And I think it's so important for us to look back and really read and reflect on the principles set forth in the Declaration of Independence so we can know our heritage and know what we need to do to preserve it.
And Rita, we've talked about the Constitution on a number of programs, but those principles in the Declaration carried over into the Constitution. And I think, too, it's important to remember because, as Woodrow Wilson once said, if we don't know where we came from, we can't know who we are or where we are going. This declaration helps with that because it is at the heart of who we are as free Americans. In addition to its deep roots in biblical history, it also helps understand our historical relationship with Britain and certainly our own history as a nation. And it's all about freedom versus slavery and tyranny. For example, let me go back to each of those. In biblical history, we have the story of Moses leading the people of Israel out of slavery in Egypt. "Let my people go." It's all about freedom. And then in British history, we just celebrated last year the 800th anniversary of the Magna Carta, in which the king was made subject to the law, just like everyone else. Once again, it was all about freedom. And then in early American history, we learned to write our own laws, beginning in 1607 in Virginia, followed by the Pilgrims, the Puritans, and then all 13 colonies that developed after them, virtually independent of British control. Freedom! It's all about freedom. Yeah. But then, from 1760 to 1775, just relating our American history, Britain tried to reestablish its control over the colonies with a long series of hostile laws, taxes, abuses, and usurpations, and I think we'll be getting into that. And it felt like tyranny to the freedom-loving colonists. "Just leave us alone!" That led to armed conflict. As a result, the colonies began to set up their own constitutional governments, and that finally led to the Declaration of Independence from Great Britain, July 4th, inspired by Patrick Henry's defiant battle cry, "Give me liberty or give me death." Finally, and this is the cost, the Declaration defines more clearly than any other document in our history what it means to be an American. So let's take a closer look at the Declaration. 25,000 Americans lost their lives in that war for independence, ending at Yorktown in 1781. It is a stark reminder that freedom is never free.
Absolutely, Dean. You know, before we get started with our analysis of the Declaration, one more thought occurred to me about why it is so important to remember and understand the Declaration, and that is that we know now when the Declaration was written, it was a set of foundational principles, but they were not all fully realized immediately. And of course, the most obvious was, and we'll get into this in a minute, but it says, they know that all men are created equal. And yet there was slavery at that time, a blight on America. So we know that as time has gone on, we have made remarkable steps toward more fully realizing the principles that were set forth in the Declaration. So it can sort of really serve as a North Star for us. This is where we need to be headed. These are the principles that need to be guiding us.
Even though they can't all be realized immediately,
exactly.
That is where we are going.
Yes.
Yes.
So let's dive in, Dean. Mm-hmm. The Declaration starts with an introduction. I'm going to, throughout the program, read a couple of the more poignant parts of the Declaration, and the introduction is one that must be read.
Absolutely.
So it starts this way. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. So that's the introduction to this glorious document, Dean. And I have to point out that the main point here is that there is a law higher than the laws of man, and it is that law, God's law, which sets an objective standard of justice to be pursued.
Rita, it is so important to note that because up until this time, the American colonists considered themselves to be British subjects.
Yes.
So when they initially appealed to the king, they appealed to English law.
Mm-hmm.
But when the king rejected those appeals to English law, they said, well, forget this. We have to appeal to a higher law,
yes,
to a higher power, the laws of nature and of nature's God.
Mm-hmm.
So important.
So let's move on to part two, which is the basic argument. And again, I'm going to read, this is probably the most famous and well-known portion of the Declaration.
Now, I should say for our listeners, Rita is an attorney, so she is making a court brief here. She is presenting the argument to the higher judge, to the supreme judge of the world.
Well, this is an argument that I am honored to make, and it goes like this. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Now, Dean, I just want to draw out four key points from this.
Mm-hmm.
First, some truths are self-evident.
Yes.
That is a proposition that would be challenged today, I think. But that's point number one. Some truths are self-evident. Number two, every human being is a person with inalienable rights that come from God.
Not from man, not from government.
That's right. Rights come from God. Number three, the proper role of a government is to secure those rights. It's a security purpose. And number four, that government derives its powers from the consent of the governed.
You know, it's interesting, Rita, that in the Declaration, the founders never referred to a revolution. In fact, they made clear in this same section that it's not just when you get impatient because a government is acting improperly or carelessly or sometimes with negligence. These things happen. They make very clear that it's only when a king engages in a long train, and you're going to get to this, of trials and usurpations and evinces the character of a tyrant. It is only then that it kicks in where you can alter or to destroy the form of government that has become despotic in its nature. And I think we get impatient with our government at times. Mm-hmm. They don't always do what we want. But when they cross the line of abusing their authority and limiting the freedoms of the people, that is when they show the character of a tyrant, as the colonists explained in the Declaration.
Before we move on, Dean, I want to ask you about one of the points in here, and it is the idea that the proper role of government is to secure the rights of the people. When I look around today, when I hear people talk and, you know, watch the news on TV and watch the political debates and, you know, some of the political candidates, even candidates for the president of the United States, when I listen to them talk, it seems to me that so many Americans have completely forgotten or don't understand or just disregard what is the proper role of a government.
You know, Rita, Ken Cuccinelli, when he was running for governor, explained it very simply. It's something I've never forgotten. You take a pie, a whole pie. A slice of that pie belongs to the authority of the government. The rest of that pie belongs to the states and to the people, as explained in the Constitution as well. And it is a whole pie that cannot be expanded. It is a limited circle. And whenever the government enlarges its share of the pie, the freedom of the people diminishes. When one enlarges, the other has to decrease. And that is what we are starting to become a little bit careless about. We become dependent on government, but in the process, we lose some of our freedom.
Yeah, and that really ties into the fourth point, which is that the Declaration points out that government derives its powers from the consent of the governed. Today, it seems to me that there are so many people, including and maybe especially people who are government officials, who seem to think that the government gives us our rights. The government tells us what we can do and what we can't do. That the government is the master and that we are the slaves, when really the relationship is exactly the opposite.
Well, as the colonists saw it, by his actions, the king had broken his compact with the people. It was a covenant arrangement. Going back to biblical times, you have this idea of covenant. And when the king breaks his compact or his covenant with the people, then it is their right to institute new forms of government, as it says
here. That's right. And, you know, Dean, that takes us right into part three of the Declaration, which are the charges. The charges against King George and the government of England that had really just abused the colonists, taken advantage of them, and treated them poorly.
Hey, Rita, I just want to say it is so important that the founders listed these 27 charges, and it goes back to that introductory paragraph. Out of a decent respect to the opinions of mankind, we need to declare the causes which impel us to this separation. Now you're going to lay out the charges before the judge. Well, the judge being the world opinion.
Yeah. Well, you know, I actually wasn't planning to go through all 27 charges. It is a long list.
Yes.
And it is really interesting that they are so detailed about the exact reasons for their complaint against the king. But what they all boil down to is tyranny.
Yes.
It's interference with the colonists' right of self-governance. That was really what was upsetting to them. It wasn't one specific thing. It wasn't one specific law or behavior they didn't like. It was this pattern of interference with the people's right of self-governance. And that, you know, takes me to another excerpt from Thomas Paine's Common Sense. And in this one part, he says, "Let the world know that so far as we approve of monarchy, that in America the law is king. For as in absolute governments the king is law, so in free countries the law ought to be king, and there ought to be no other." And that's what they were looking for, the right to be a self-governing people who were not subject to the abuses of power by a tyrannical government.
Well, and this brings us back to, I think, a common misunderstanding of the reason why the colonists felt compelled to declare their independence. That misunderstanding is it's all about taxation without representation. It's all about money. No, it's all about freedom.
Yes.
In fact, this line, this charge, "He has imposed taxes on us without our consent."
Yes.
There are 27 charges. That one is number 17.
It was not all about money.
It goes back to freedom.
Yes.
Because others, and you're not going to list all 27, and I won't either, but "He has refused his assent to our laws. He has disbanded our legislatures. He has quartered troops in our homes." It is about him taking our freedom, including the taxation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about freedom, not about money.
Yeah.
Hey, I would also say, you talked about the laws and lex rex. You, of course, you're familiar, having worked with the Rutherford Institute.
Yes.
The law is king. And Thomas Jefferson said, "If a law is unjust, a man is not only right to disobey it, he is obligated to do so." Martin Luther King Jr. said basically the same thing when he was in a Birmingham jail. He said, "An unjust law is no law at all." And the colonists were complaining about an abuse of the law that was destroying their freedom.
Which again led them to appeal to the law that is above every law,
exactly.
And that is God's law.
Exactly.
The law of nature and of nature's God. Well, let's move on to part 4 of the Declaration, which is the defendant's response, the rejection by the king and by the parliament. And I think this is so important. I'm going to read another excerpt from the Declaration, and it comes immediately after the listing of those 27 specific charges. It says, "In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people." I think it is really significant that the colonists did not just sit back and take abuse after abuse quietly, and then at the end of it, all of a sudden get mad and throw some sort of a tantrum. They were doing their job. They were doing the work of being a self-governing people all throughout this process, because they were petitioning for redress every time. Consistently. Do we do that today, Dean?
Again and again and again and again, we're losing patience.
Yeah.
Aren't we losing patience like the colonists lost patience? And here's something I just learned. We talk about their petitioning the king. There was what was called the olive branch petition. Let's make one more effort to get the king to back off. John Adams wrote to his wife, Abigail. He said, "You know, this declaration has taken longer than I think it should have. We should have done this 6 months ago. But Abigail, you know something? I think during this 6 months, we have demonstrated that we are just in making this declaration. We have made every effort, and now we've unified the people behind us in a way that we couldn't have done 6 months ago. Are we getting to that point today?
We will discuss that. But you know, Dean, God's timing is perfect.
Yeah, sometimes we get impatient with God, don't we?
Yes, what are you doing? His timing is perfect.
It's true.
He knows exactly what he's doing. But that moves us on to the final judgment.
Yes.
A declaration by the colonies and their concluding pledge. And of course, I have to read this final section of the declaration. It says, "We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do."
Hey, now we need a drum roll here.
Okay, drum roll.
Because now we're getting into the pledge.
"And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." What do you say to that, Dean?
That is just powerful. And they realized fully that this was not an empty declaration. This had consequences.
Oh, yes.
And I said, as I stated earlier, the number of people who were killed in the war for their independence. Freedom is never free. We have to continually fight for it day in and day out. Today, we're not taking up arms, but it is a battle to defend our freedoms. And I guess, Rita, that really comes down to, we've talked about it, but what is the linkage now between the Declaration and the Constitution, from the heart and spirit of the Declaration to the, it's like a car.
Yeah.
The Declaration is the engine, the Constitution is the body.
Yeah.
And so what's the linkage now between the principles of the Declaration and the Constitution and how that is affecting our culture today? Are we in a place where we need a new Declaration of Independence?
Yes. Well, as we've already pointed out, Dean, the Constitution didn't perfectly achieve the principles that were declared and set forth in the Declaration of Independence. But the Constitution was very much, as far as establishing a basic structure for government, it very much did draw upon and stay true to many of those principles. And I'll just point out a few. First of all, checks and balances. We all learn in school, I think they still teach in school anyway, that checks and balances is really a hallmark of the Constitution and American government. And it was all because, as we've seen set forth in the Declaration, our founders knew that man is inherently sinful and tends to want to accrue more and more power for himself. So they knew that there needed to be checks and balances in place to counter that. Secondly, and relatedly, as we've talked about before on the program, the founders in the Constitution created a national or federal government of specifically enumerated powers because they knew there would need to be limits rather than creating a national government with plenary power to just do whatever it wanted except for a couple of carve-out things. They made it the other way around and said, we are going to have a national government that can only perform these specific functions. Then finally, the Bill of Rights that was enacted soon after the rest of the Constitution to set forth specifically liberties of the people that could not be infringed in any way. And I would specifically reference the 10th Amendment, which reinforced the principle that the federal government can only do what it's specifically allowed to do. All other powers are reserved to the states or the people.
Well, Rita, we talked earlier, and we don't need to refresh that now, but we have just seen so many examples of when our federal government has exceeded its authority, whether it's the Supreme Court, and we've just seen other recent examples of how it overrides the rules, the laws of the individual states and of the people. So the question is, do we need a new declaration? It's interesting that 240 years ago, we were much more unified in our Christian faith and belief than we are now. We were out of many one, and then in God we trust. But the consequences of our becoming fragmented and balkanized makes it almost more difficult to come back to this original vision. Rita, I think we have to close. We're running out of time. But what can we do now to restore that declaration and the principles embodied in the Constitution?
Well, Dean, we, as you know, have not yet exhausted all of the checks and balances available to us in the Constitution in order to rein in our overbearing federal government, which has really escaped the original boundaries set on its power. And what I'm getting at is Article 5 of the Constitution provides a way for the states to come together in a convention for proposing amendments that would restrain and reinforce, reinvigorate, clarify the meaning of the original limitations on federal power. We need to use that remaining check and balance, that ultimate check on federal power. And as you know, we've talked about it many times on the program, there is a movement underway to do just that. So I would encourage listeners to go to conventionofstates.com and find out more information about how you can make that happen. It is a growing movement that is sweeping the nation, but we can use more help.
Well, Rita, I think too, on an individual basis, we need to pray and grab a hole. We have to speak out when we see injustice being done. Now more than ever, we need a spiritual revival as much as a political revival. And we need to fight for what we believe, just as the Hebrew midwives did, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did. Google Manhattan Declaration. Sign that, because we will obey Caesar when Caesar is just, but under no circumstances will we render to Caesar what is God.
That's right.
So, Rita, we have a full job ahead of us. We need to continue fighting for our freedom. And I think that's a challenge for all of us.
Absolutely. Well, it's time for us to close today as we prepare to celebrate and defend our great Declaration of Independence. You know, you can also listen to this program again or share it with your friends by going to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to the Crossroads on the homepage. As always, we are deeply grateful for your prayers, your encouragement, and your generous financial support. If you would like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check sent to P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia 22803. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and our engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.
Rejoice, 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 rej joy.